Welcome to Delight in the Word, the preaching ministry of Paul Touches, pastor at Cornerstone Community Church in Cleveland, Ohio. In today's broadcast, Pastor Paul preaches from Philippians chapter 2, verses 17 to 18, in a message titled, The Joy of Sacrificial Service. Let's open our Bibles there as we together delight in the Word.
The Christian life, when properly understood, is a life of sacrifice. The Gospel of Matthew tells us that Jesus told his disciples, if anyone would come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross and follow me. For whoever would save his life will lose it, but whoever loses his life for my sake will find it. For what will it profit a man if he gains the whole world and forfeits his soul? Or what shall a man give in return for his soul? For the Son of Man is going to come with his angels in the glory of his Father, and then he will repay each person according to what he has done. If anyone would come after me, Jesus says, let him deny himself. Let him take up his cross and follow me. Let him lose his life for my sake, that he might find it. For if instead we seek to preserve our life for our own sake, we will lose it. I am firmly convinced that when we get to the end of our lives and we stand before the Lord, one thing the Lord will never say to us is, you gave too much to me. You sacrificed too much for my name and for my glory and for my church. Revelation tells us that there will be tears in heaven because it says he'll wipe them away. And I believe that the tears that he wipes away will be the tears of Christians who realize in the shortness of life how little they did for him, how much more there was to do for the gospel. And I'm concerned. I'm concerned that we live in a day and age in which the mentality of today's evangelical church culture is not one of sacrifice. Many professing Christians have supposedly come to Christ, but remain dedicated to live a life for themselves. Jesus fits very neatly into a certain segment of their lives. Jesus is carefully managed by them. His demands are not taken to the radical extreme in which they surely sound in the Gospels. Jesus is often adored for the benefits that he brings into their lives, but he's not worshiped. He's not embraced in a to die for kind of way. And I think that's one of the reasons why there will be tears in heaven. And Jesus will wipe them away. And there is too often a lack of endurance among Christians today. Some give up so easily. So many come to Jesus in order to get their best life now. And then they're deeply disappointed when God doesn't line up with their expectations. And God doesn't bow to their agenda. And God does not measure up to their definition of success, which too often is basically the enjoyment of all that the world has to offer without Jesus cramping their style. When life does not happen as they expect it to, then many are like the seed in Jesus' parable that springs up for a short time and then is choked out by the worries and the cares of this world and all that this world has to offer. Unless we fall prey to the pride that leads us to think that only other people or other churches are self-serving at times, we need to look in the mirror this morning. We need to evaluate our own lives. Are we sacrificial people? Are we people who are willing to sell all out for Jesus? What I mean is, do we serve God until it hurts? Or do we only serve him to the point that it fits neatly into our schedules? Are we fearful of overdoing it? Or do our lives demonstrate sacrifice? Are we so consumed with being wise stewards of everything that we have and everything that is our lives that we have lost the risk-taking nature of faith? Have we tamed our God? Have we placed him on a polite leash? Have we domesticated him and softened the call to radical discipleship? I ask you, are we a people of sacrifice? And I think it's a very important time for us as a church to think about sacrifice. We are now one generation old. Generation is 25 to 30 years. So we are now one generation old as a church. That is, the men and women whom God used to plant and build this church are no longer young. They are now the older men and the older women of the church. And their ministry continues. And their lives continue to display the example of love and sacrifice and service to God. But there is a dangerous pattern that we now enter into. Once a church is established, there is a pattern that is very common. The first generation that sacrificed so much is usually followed by a generation that takes advantage of all that we enjoy and then becomes lazy. Instead of giving all that we are for the work of the Lord, the natural tendency is now for us to become self-satisfied and to slip into maintenance mode. As a church, but there is massive work to be done for Christ. I see all that's gone in to prepare for this week of EBS, and I am thrilled, and I rejoice, and I see love and sacrifice and giving, and yet, lest we fall, we must be aware of this dangerous pattern that is common in most churches. Let us beware of it. Let us realize that there is so much that still needs to be accomplished here in Mayfield Heights, and I believe that we are at a very unique place in our history as a church. There are mountains yet to climb. There are valleys to march through with confidence and faith. There is so much territory that needs to be claimed for the gospel. Oh, let us not be content. Let us not be complacent. We have choices to make. Will we slow down and take it easy now that we have such a nice established ministry that functions and runs so well and is filled with such beautiful people and God has built a testimony? Will we just slow down and take it easy? Will we turn on church cruise control, or will we flip it into neutral and begin to coast downhill, or will we seize the day? Will we seize the day that we live in? And will we march forward with a whole new sense of renewed zeal and fervor for God and love for the lost? Will we love God and serve our neighbors? Will we sacrifice our time to serve because the needs are so great? Let us stop bemoaning the downhill slide of our culture, and let us rise up and realize that we are here today for such a time as this. There is work to be done. There is gospel outreach that needs to happen in this community and to the ends of the earth. Will we sacrifice ourselves for it? Will we sacrifice our money to become the most effective tool for equipping the people of God in Mayfield Heights, Ohio? Will we give speed to the gospel? Or will we just keep improving our own lives? Buying nicer cars, larger flat screen TVs, fancier cell phones? See, a comfortable life can easily become the enemy of sacrificial service. That's true of individuals. It's also true of churches. Let us beware of becoming too comfortable, lest we lose a spirit of sacrifice for the Lord. And so again I ask you, are we people of sacrifice? We are in Philippians again this morning, and I confess we're not going to get anywhere near my original plan. We were going to work through quite a number of verses this morning to stay on schedule, but the Holy Spirit is in charge of this preaching schedule, and so we're not going to cover all of that I had planned so long ago, because I really was arrested by these two verses in Philippians 2, verses 17 and 18. And I thought to myself, I cannot shortchange God's people by flying right by them. And Paul writes, even if I am to be poured out as a drink offering upon the sacrificial offering of your faith, I am glad and rejoice with you all. Likewise, you also should be glad and rejoice with me. You may remember from a few weeks ago that we were hearing instruction from the Apostle Paul concerning our attitude. We are to be people who are filled with thanksgiving, not grumbling and disputing, but thanksgiving and love for unity and truth, shining as lights in the world, holding fast to the word of life, that is, holding fast to the gospel, never giving an inch on the gospel. And then it seems as though he makes these passing comments that if by the way, if I'm poured out as a drink offering upon the sacrificial offering of your faith, I'm glad and I rejoice with you, and you should be glad too. And then he moves on to talk about two exemplary servants, Timothy and Epaphroditus. But what is Paul saying to us in these two verses? We see his example in verse 17 that he is being poured out as a drink offering upon the sacrificial offering of your faith. A drink offering that refers to a small sacrifice poured over the top of a large sacrifice. It takes us back to Numbers 15, where we realize that wine and oil were often poured out on top of the main sacrifice. And then that sacrifice was burned as a sweet aroma unto the Lord. In other words, Paul is saying his ministry as an apostle to the church in Philippi is an add-on to their ministry. He doesn't strut through the front door and say, "Hey, I'm the apostle now. It's time to serve me." No, he says, "I'm here as God's servant, and your sacrificial offering of faith is the greater ministry, and mine is like a drink offering that's being poured on top." In other words, the ministry of the church as a whole is more valuable than the ministry of one leader. That's why Ephesians 4 says that the main role of the pastors in a church is not to do all of the ministry, but to equip you to do the ministry. And I'm thrilled to see that here at Cornerstone. So many who are involved in so many ways. And I feel very much like Paul here in verse 17. I feel so grateful, my wife and I both, in the Lord bringing us here to Cleveland, here to Cornerstone. There were many years of great difficulty that the Lord used to prepare our hearts for you. And I hear from you that the Lord was working in your hearts and your life as a church, preparing you for me and for us as a family. And I am so amazed at the providential leading of the Lord in bringing us together. And I feel like a drink offering that I'm just being poured out over the top of sacrificial service and faith that has been going on here for decades. And it's such a blessing. And so Paul says, "I'm glad and I rejoice with you all." He calls it the sacrificial offering of their faith because it is their faith that gave birth to the sacrifice. That's really important for us to understand because there are some segments and brands of Christianity that teach that sacrifice is what leads to faith. That is not a biblical understanding. True, acceptable sacrifice grows out of faith. It does not precede it. When sacrifice precedes faith, what you have is works religion that sends people to hell. But when there is a working faith, it will naturally produce works of faith, which includes sacrifice. And so he says in verse 18, "You should be glad and rejoice with me." You should rejoice with me as well at what the Lord has done and he is doing. So instead of moving on from those verses, I want us to think about the Philippians' example and what about their lives, in what areas did Paul see sacrifice which led him to make this statement in verse 17. And I see three qualities. The selfless example of these believers reveal three qualities of sacrificial Christians. So they're evidences of sacrificial faith in the Philippians' lives, and they then serve for us to be examples of what sacrificial Christian living should look like to us. Notice, first of all, that sacrificial Christians partner with other gospel ministries. Turn back to chapter 1. You may remember this from a couple months ago when we began the book of Philippians, that Paul is so grateful for their partnership in the gospel. He says in verse 3 of chapter 1, I thank my God in all my remembrance of you, always in every prayer of mine for you all, making my prayer with you because of your partnership in the gospel. That word partnership, it comes from the same word from which we get fellowship. So, in other words, there was a common love for the gospel, a common agreement that we are saved to serve God, to glorify Him, and to take the gospel to the ends of the earth. How did the Philippians partner with Paul in the gospel? Well, he gives us a little insight into that. Look at verse 19. For I know that through your prayers and the help of the Spirit of Jesus Christ, this will turn out for my deliverance. They partnered with him in the gospel in praying for him, praying for his ministry. As he traveled around the region, as he planted churches, as he went and visited churches that had previously been planted, Paul was met by constant opposition from Satan and his armies of demons. And so he appreciates their prayer support for him. He, in chapter 4, will talk about their financial significance, their financial partnership. And that was such a significant part of their partnership. And Paul took more time in the book to talk about that aspect of their partnership than any other, that we're going to spend more time on that later. But think about the Philippian church and think back a couple months to when we began thinking about this church and why did they have such a heart for the gospel? Well, it's because they experienced the life of Christ coming to them through the gospel. See, they were first-generation believers. They hadn't been around the gospel long enough to become complacent. And that's a warning to those of you who are second-generation, third-generation believers. There is great danger in you becoming so familiar with the gospel, and it's just so much a part of your life. You're born into a Christian family, raised in a Christian family, and now your children are raising their children in a Christian family. And it's you have this long heritage of Christianity, biblical Christianity in your family. You are in danger. Yes, you are incredibly blessed, but you are incredibly vulnerable. That you will become careless about the gospel. You will lose a fervor and a zeal for what Christ can do in the life of a sinner. These Philippian believers, it was still fresh for them. Not enough time had gone by for them to have forgotten how glorious their salvation was. Paul had brought the gospel to them along with his companions. You may remember that the church of Philippi was birthed in a prison, primarily. The first meeting took place down by the river when led by the Holy Spirit, they were taken down to the river to a women's prayer meeting, and God opened the heart of Lydia to receive the gospel, to be converted to Christ. And later on in the chapter, in Acts 16, we see Paul and Silas in prison, and they're giving praise to God while they are in prison. And these joyful evangelists are used by God. You may remember there is an earthquake. The prison doors are thrown open. And the jailer, terrified that he will lose his life for losing prisoners, cries out, "What must I do to be saved?" That was the beginning of the Philippian church. People coming face to face with Christ, being converted. And so Paul is so thankful for their partnership. And he draws attention to that aspect of their sacrifice.
The world will never be reached with the gospel if we try to go it alone. There can be great spiritual fruit in sacrificially partnering with like-minded gospel preaching ministries. If you'd like a copy of this message, you can find it on our website at delightintheword.org. While you're there, you'll find a number of Pastor Paul's books, blog posts, and other resources to encourage you in your faith. You can also find Delight in the Word on many of your favorite podcast platforms. If you live in the Cleveland area and you're not currently involved in a church, we invite you to visit us at Cornerstone. We'd love to meet you and worship our Lord along with you. This program has been sponsored by Cornerstone Community Church in Mayfield Heights, Ohio. Be sure to join us next time as we learn the next two qualities of sacrificial Christians as we together delight in the Word.